The KJS Show, Sundays on Kofifi FM 97.2.
Today on the KJS Show, you know, we don't just fellowship with the artist. We enter a living archive surrounded by paint, memory, vinyl, silence and sound. This is indeed where jazz listens back. And sitting with me is one of South Africa's most revered visual storytellers, the man whose art hums, swings, remembers and refuses to forget. Welcome, Sam Ntlangetwa, to the KJS Show.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for inviting us into this beautiful space. You know, I really wanted to start in the beginning, since this is the very first time you're joining us, you know, at the station and on the show. Before the galleries, the global stages, take us back to Painful, you know, growing up in Springs, you know, what was that like? And as I always ask my guests, when did you fall in love with jazz?
Well, I can say that I was lucky because my two eldest brothers were jazz lovers. Mm. But the eldest one, Ranki, he was a big influence in me. And he was a jazz musician. He played multiple instruments. Mm. So all the time I say to people, when I do an artwork related to jazz, it's more like I'm paying homage to him because he's deceased. Mm. But I forever talk about my eldest brother.
Yeah.
He's the one who gave me this oxygen, which is jazz.
Yeah.
I'm proud of him.
Yeah. Take us back to the streets, Painville. What was Sam like growing up?
Well, the thing is, I was born in Painville, but Kanakutsele, the system, moved over to like Sophiatown to Soweto. So
correct.
I was young when we left. But like Nahe, Kankiwa Kinkhuma, Kako Heidelberg. So I grew up under my grandmother from age less than 1 year until about 14. Mm. And then I joined my family, Kotema, when I was 14 years. Mm. But the life, both townships, to me, they're such an inspiration.
Yeah.
Ratanda and Tema, they are such an inspiration. I mean, like Sundays, we go to church. After church, we have lunch.
Yeah.
From there, with friends, we're going to watch soccer. And then you see our parents, they were very trendy. There was fashion. These people, where were they getting money?
Yeah.
But they were very trendy.
Yeah.
Makaima, ma oledi, kadi costume. But ilimole chere umbrella to shaba game. And you see
Sunday afternoon.
Yeah. And we didn't know those cars were vintages, but body Chevrolet, body Biscayne.
Hey.
You know?
Hey.
So but I think under apartheid we had means to live as people.
You mentioned your grandmother and she left you with a line that feels like a life philosophy when she says, or rather, you must learn, not lean.
Yes.
Let's reflect on this sentence, you know, that has followed you through everything, not just as an artist, but as a man.
It's true.
You know?
It has followed me,
yeah.
But it was a very strong tool she gave me. And I had a suit to how to tell something. We too, this guy, it's Hitler.
Yeah, that's right.
Learn, don't lean.
That's right.
And it's a very strong kind of tool, words that she gave me, because indeed, that's how I learned to be who I am. Because whoever tried to mentor me, I took that with respect and with warm hands.
Powerful statement.
And I'm Sam Ntlangetwa because of my grandmother taught me to be a strong person at a young age.
Mm. Still at home, you know, we get our lessons from our grandparents. You know, they nurture, they teach, they give into your life. And you've spoken so much about humility, Brasem, being the central part of your upbringing. In a world that often rewards egos and flashy, you know, how did humility, I guess, become a strength rather than a limitation for you?
I think I'm born with it. It's natural. I don't fake it.
Yeah.
And it's like if I come across somebody who's aloof, I shiver because it looks like is he acting?
Yeah.
Because I can't be out of my skin and disrespect the next person.
Correct.
And be arrogant. It doesn't exist in me.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I remember one person said, "I can't believe that I'm meeting Sam Ntlangetwa."
Yeah.
And I said, "Why?" He said, "I've known the name Sam Ntlangetwa for a long time." And like now, meeting the person, that person doesn't match the fame that he is.
Yeah.
I said, you're too humble for me.
By the way, is this the real one? Where's Sam? It's about the same, you know?
That's true.
Your childhood, was there a moment where you realized that I see the world differently? Because I think we also have that thing, that self-introspection thing where you realize I'm different, you know? I might be an artist. Some of them, I'll be a soccer star. Some of them, I'll be an actor. Some of them, I'll be a chef. What was that for you, you know, with art?
You know, not long time ago, a friend of mine, Vusim Nimalo, who we started from lower primary in Ratanda to higher primary, he was telling some guys, said, you know, our school was named Itswaren. In the entire school, there was never an artist. We started to realize there's art because of Sam. He says, one day, and I forgot about that. He says, one day we're standing as a group of friends talking about something. And then I started to illustrate that with my finger on the sand. And there was a time when a singer, Percy Sledge, came to South Africa.
Yeah.
And then it was in the front page of, what was the paper then? Post or World? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Before Soweto. So it was in the, my uncle used to buy newspapers. So
yeah.
I saw that and then I started to copy that and
sketch.
Draw it.
Yes.
Draw it. And then I took it to school, showed to my classmates, and my teacher was proud. He took it, he showed other teachers, like, this is my student, this is my student. So, but then I didn't get it. For me, it was just like part of a growing child.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And obsessed with copying, tracing, etc.
Yeah.
Until I came to high school during the riots, 1976. I mean, classes were not happening, but they tried to keep us in the schoolyards because, like, it was chaotic outside.
Yeah.
The army, the police were there. So our teacher said, you don't have to do any formal subjects, just do anything you want. If you want to draw, if you want to do this, do anything, guys. I gave you the freedom.
Yeah.
My desk was closer to the window. I opened the window, looked into the garden, and I started to draw, like, do the garden, and the window was showing.
Yes.
Then later he came, he looked at everybody else, and then he said to me, you must consider studying art.
Wow.
You have a good sense of doing perspective and proportions. I would say that's that man, Mr. Pilankulu, he's the one who made me to drop out of high school to go and study art.
And you studied art. I know you tell the story of KZN at 21 years old.
Yeah.
I find that story very interesting. You know, and maybe for those that are listening and have no idea what we're referring to, let's briefly get into that. You know, you're at the train station, you're 21 years old.
At a train station, 21 years old. That was a very emotional trip for me.
Yeah.
Because my mother didn't want me. I don't think she didn't want me to study art, but like, none of her kids left home to be boarding school, etc. So I was the first child. And but that it, to me, it showed the sense of independence that I had, that my grandmother taught me. You are not going to be a sissy boy.
Yeah.
Stand for yourself. So emotionally so, because like, when she realized that now my son is leaving.
Yeah.
Captain Utsiba Mangmoli. I don't know anyone.
Who do you know in KZN?
Yeah. And then, well, just before my brother took me to the station with his car, my mother said, give me a moment. She went to an opposite neighbor. They came and she said, let us pray for you.
Yeah.
And that was very touching.
And off you went.
Off I went with a heavy Nersevisadi trunk.
Yes.
Trunk.
Oh.
And like, I don't know, no one. At the Jemistin station, Shosholoza train.
Wow.
Straight to Glencoe.
Yes.
We left at about 8 p.m. We arrived at 3. But Yafita.
Yes, yes.
One guy was saying, it was like they would announce your name or whatever.
Just stop somehow, eh?
So one of the guys, Nebafita, or hey, why is it we were ready to say, whatever we said, we should lie. And the station said, Kena fela la tewaga 3, and how dark. And I sat there waiting for the other train to take me to Dandi station. And that train was going to come at about 8. So I've been there since 3 until 8.
A good 5 hours.
Yeah.
Wow.
But those are the things, when you look back, that you took risks, but for the right reason.
For the right reasons.
Yeah.
And look at where it's brought you. You know, I mean, I'm sitting here with the Standard Bank Young Artist Award winner for 1994. 1994. That era was a very strange, but a very renewing, I guess, if I'm going to use that word.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that one?
I didn't believe it.
Yeah.
I didn't believe it because, like, two guys and a lady came into my studio, and I knew them, and said, "Yeah, I know. What are you busy with?" I said, "No, I'm just like working as usual." I said, "No, we just have to brief you. We're just checking you, moving on, checking other artists. Yeah, you're nominee for young artists for standard playing." I said, "Wow." And they went. And 3 days later, one called and said, "We're actually the winner, but we didn't want to tell you."
Then.
I said, "Oh my God. Oh my God." You know, it's like you're getting this national thing,
yes.
You know? And I said to myself, you know, now it means that this is the beginning for me.
Correct.
Because I shouldn't let anyone down.
Mm-hmm.
But before, I never let anyone down. But like now,
So the world's eyes are on you.
And it came in a very strange way because it was that year when I handed my resignation letter to the SABC because I worked for SABC for 13 years as a set designer. But they said to me, "Could we ask you to do one last set for us?"
Yeah.
I said that it's fine. But you know why?
Mm-mm.
That set they wanted me to do, they wanted to be politically correct. It was 1994.
Correct, yes.
And then in our office, we were 11, 12, and the rest were white set designers. I was the only black designer. So they felt that it was appropriate for them
at the time
to do a set for Mandela and President de Klerk's speech at the Civic Theatre. I designed that set. So that's how I bowed out.
You know, jazz enters back in the room. You said that sound and feeling are inseparable, Prasem. And we know you from the circles of being a DJ, Ning Ning. You know, you speak very fluently when it comes to the jazz language. And when you listen to Miles Davis, you know, what happens visually in your mind? If we're going to use him as an example.
I can use him anytime. I can use Miles anytime.
Yeah. You
know, Miles stood toe-to-toe with the racists. He stood toe-to-toe with the racists, and that didn't dampen his spirit. I think there's similarity between Miles and Muhammad Ali. They were targeted because, like, they were top elite black people. And the system will always go for those to show their followers that you are nothing, we can't do. But Miles like, stood toe-to-toe with the racist America.
Mm.
And Miles was proud of himself that I didn't do jazz because of poverty.
Mm.
He came from a learned family. Miles would take his friends and say, let's go and chill at my parents' farm.
Mm.
When he was beaten up by this white policeman, he said, I know why you're beating me, because I'm a black person and I'm driving a Ferrari.
Mm. Mm.
The white man said, yes.
Mm.
So, I mean, those are some things, like when Miles has got so much rich stories. All of them, they've got their stories, Charles Mingus, Art Blakey. But I don't know, I paid attention, more attention to Miles.
A legend, an icon.
Yes.
An icon.
Yes.
You know, earlier you mentioned that you found the institution of jazz through your brother, you know, or maybe the jazz institution found you, you know, if we look at it the other direction.
Yeah.
What did jazz give you that words or images alone could not?
When I started following jazz, loving jazz, and I looked around people who were jazz fans, very peaceful, ladies and gentlemen. They go there, if somebody's going having a session, then vinyl session before the CDs.
Mm.
And that person who's hosting them will provide food, and they'll come well-dressed up. And I said, then, I'm in the right place to be in the jazz space.
Mm.
There's so much discipline in people who listen to jazz.
Correct.
And they respect one another. Probably the arrogance doesn't exist there.
Mm-hmm.
If you are arrogant in the jazz world, you are lost.
Completely.
So I think you just like embrace jazz as something that can carry you, not practicing it, but following it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky because like painting without jazz to me, it doesn't make sense.
Mm.
And remember that Miles Davis was a part-time painter, artist, and then his practice was jazz. So I'm a full-time painter, part-time jazz lover. That's why you can see the instruments.
Listen, you know, I wish we could share the visuals with our listeners in terms of the kind of space that we're in that really does conjure up, you know, nostalgia. It conjures up, you know, the feeling of wholeness when it comes to jazz expression, jazz celebration, and being a part of the bigger community. And do you remember, Rasem, the first time you felt that your art moved someone else that traveled beyond you?
I think I can vividly think about when William Kennedy's father said he likes my collages and they bought them.
Hmm.
And then I said, his son does art. His son is great, but he chose to buy my art. And William, I mean, not long ago, William told me that I still see what my father bought from you when I visit him in London.
Mm.
I said, oh, that's nice. I said, I remember that. When you get a chance, just take a pic, but I remember. But those are some of the things that one can remember at an early age. I think it was around early 80s.
Yeah.
And then I said, well, choose that. I'm going to make money.
Yeah. The path was drawn. The line was drawn, you know, in a sense.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. Kofifi FM, we are in the company of Sam Tlengetwa, the Sunday, a visual artist, jazz enthusiast, and mentor. And for today's edition of the show, we cast our ears and our eyes into the new year, which is 2026, and some of the interesting happenings around the arts and jazz. Of course, we've also been listening to a wonderfully curated musical playlist from Sam in between our conversation. Now, earlier you mentioned the SABC. Having worked as a set designer, you know, creating the iconic Nelson Mandela and F.W. de Klerk set, you know, essentially witnessing history from the behind the scenes, you know. Ironically, that moment was your last job, you know. So looking back, how do you read that chapter of your life?
You know, it had its own challenges. Very, very serious challenges that were emotional and stressful. Remember, the set builders, that department was fully fascist.
Yes.
And when you are a set designer, more or less like an architect, at the end of doing the plans of the house, you need to discuss with the builders.
Correct.
Meaning they need to take your instructions.
Mm.
So it was like that. But those RVP guys couldn't see themselves taking instructions from a black man. And then I would simply say, we are all employees of the SABC. It's not my instruction, it's part of the
job. Part of the job.
But one colleague of mine, he said to me, Sam, you know, I feel for you. I don't know how are you taking this whole racism from those guys. Sometimes I can see when you are with them or they are coming to ask you something in the office, everybody could hear that the way they talk to you is not the way they talk to us. And I said to him, Paul, you know, we grew up in tough times, but there were things that consoled us. I used to read, and then one of the books that I read was Steve Biko's book, I Write What I Like, and Steve Biko would just say, black men, you're on your own. I said to him, in this whole office, I'm the only black person, and I'm on my own.
On your own.
I'll stand toe-to-toe with them.
Sure. Really incredible stories we're telling this Sunday, and of course, we're spending time with Bras Sam. You know, your work often feels like a conversation between memory and truth. I suppose for me, anyway. You know, do you see yourself as an artist, an archivist, or a witness of the times?
I see myself reflecting my story in different ways. You know, I've done stories about township scenes. I've gone to the mines to do a research about the miners. I've been to Senegal, experiencing the life of Senegalese people, which something that really impressed me is that most of the markets were run by women. And then I came back and I did a show about Senegalese women. So it's more reflecting my story about my life in different forms. And I remember prior to 1994, there was a journalist from France who interviewed me, asking how does it feel to see that now you are closer to the door of democracy. Apartheid is gone. I said, no, it feels good. It feels like somebody will acknowledge me as a human being. And she said, but like now, most of you guys, what you painted was like part of the sufferings you had under the regime. Is that not going to affect you, subject matter? I said, you know, under this regime, life in the townships was normal. People got married. People had parties. People went to music. Life went on.
Yeah.
So I didn't choose just to do bodies that were shot during 76 or Sharpeville. There were other activities that we focused on. So I painted what really inspires me and what I like. And in future, if I can still see dead bodies, I won't be biased. I'll still go for that. So I'll do what I like.
During the difficult political times, did your art feel like a place of refuge, maybe a form of resistance or responsibility, you know, or maybe all three? Let's reflect on this.
Yeah, it did. It did reflect all three. It did. Because why would I paint like a European artist, and yet I'm in Africa, and not only in Africa, in South Africa, where things are happening of not respecting the human rights. So it was, I would say it reflected all three questions that you have to ask me, my practice. Yeah.
Thank you.
You know, I also want to talk about the language of collage and rhythm, which is my favorite part of this conversation. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you know, your signature style, collage, is oil, it's realism, rhythm, almost feels musical. How did you get to this visual language? What made you decide this is how I want to show the world in my view?
I remember that year, 77, first year in Natal, studying art. We were taught printmaking, drawing, painting, sculpting, etc. And somewhere I just like got bored and then started to experiment. I've never seen a collage before. Like, you paste and then you paint over, you know, you play around with formats that you find in magazines. And then winter time, I used to study also at the Art Foundation. And then they were also taught how to draw portraits, etc. But during my spare time at home, I would do collages. And then one day, I came with 5 collages. And I said to Bill, Bill was a tutor. I said, Bill, I wanted to show you what I practice at home. I said, well, that's very interesting. And he asked me, do you know an artist called Romain Bierden? And I said, who is that? He said, okay, do 2-3 more and then we'll sit down. And yes, I did other, more like 8-3 size. I did them, and then Bill, at lunchtime, we sat at his office having tea, and then he pulled a thick book. He said, there's Romain Bierden.
Wow.
It was the first time. I've never heard about him. I've never seen his work, his artworks. And since that day, I said, I want to do collage because Romain Bierden inspired me. His, you mentioned something that connects collage with music, that harmony.
Yes.
No wonder the Marsalis brothers, Wintin and Bradford.
Correct.
They are covers. They use the artworks of Romain Bierden.
Such influence.
Yeah.
And when you're working, Prasem, how much of it is planned, or how much of it is improvisation, like jazz?
It's both. Sometimes, if I'm not controlled by a theme, because with themes, I know that, okay, now I want to do interiors. And then sort of like do your research about certain interiors, you check the magazines, inspired by the fashion, the furniture, inspired by the walls, colors, and then you now set. So, okay, I need to get these formats of canvases, 1 meter square, etc. And then in my mind, I know what am I going to do. And then I go straight to the only thing that I start with is just to do pencil lines, just to do the form, the
outline,
to guide me. And then when I go with colors, and then I know, and then I start to paint, and then I would sort of like get an image of a sofa somewhere. Sometimes I use my own furniture. Do it, and then like, and that's how it goes.
Fascinating.
The difference is when I've been to Senegal, and then there I have to carry my sketchbook to do the sketches of the people there, and then which is not a very common thing, whereby I would sort of like work referring to a sketchbook. Most of the time, it's just straight from my head.
Improv.
Exactly.
Improv.
Yeah.
And you listen to jazz while you paint, and you've often referred to jazz as oxygen during this process.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
What happens when the room is silent? Take us to that space.
I can't work. I used to get mad in my studio. I used to have a studio at August House.
Yeah.
And I used to get mad when I'm like in the mood. Working, music is playing, vinyl is playing, boom, load shedding.
Those days,
Yeah. And I'll simply switch off everything there, and then lock my studio, come back home.
Yeah. If your paintings had a tempo, and this is in your words now, you know, what would they sound like? Would they swing? Would they drift? Do they demand attention? What are you leaning towards?
My paintings will be there, and they will be like a magnet to the audience. And a magnet can just like take it.
Yeah.
So
demand attention.
Whoever becomes the victim of the painting, I smile all the way to the bank.
Speaking of the bank, you and I gather today because of a very exciting happening, you know, in this year, 2026.
Yeah.
You know, where you are now, the first South African artist to design the official poster for the Montreux Jazz Festival that is coming to Franschhoek.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel when that call came?
I said, why me? Got a shock because, like, I mean, Montreux, it's like started 60 years ago.
Yes.
And Montreux decides to come not only in Africa, but in South Africa.
Yeah.
And when I was called about that, can you do sketches that are jazz related to see if we can choose for a poster? I said, I can do that, but I can also show you in my sketchbook some of the jazz collages that haven't been shown before.
Mm.
Oh, give us three of those. I did. Boom. They chose the Charles Mingus.
Yes.
They chose the Charles Mingus, and I couldn't believe. I mean, like, I'm in Africa. Africa is huge. How many artists do we have in Africa?
Countless.
How many artists do we have in South Africa? And like, they decide to go with Sam Klangeto.
Yeah.
I think my grandmother and my brother, like, wherever they are, they're proud of me.
That's right.
Because those are the people who really gave me what I had. I'm not saying anything about my parents, father and mother, but I didn't get...
The institution wasn't there.
It wasn't there.
You know. And I fully understand that, because my institution for jazz does not come from my mother and my father. It comes from my grandparents.
Yes. Okay.
Different conversation, you know. But the artwork, you know, you've mentioned is Charles Mingus.
Yes.
Painted over a decade ago. And you are quoted to have said that it's as if Charles Mingus was waiting for Montreux to come to Africa, which I find incredibly interesting. What does Mingus represent to you, musically, politically, and spiritually?
Charles Mingus is also like Miles Davis. He used to talk a lot about racism in America. But he's the first person to make me fall in love with big bands.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's an album that is popular in the township to jazz collectors. It's called Our Home. And there's a track, Wednesday Night Prayer Meeting, and tracks like You Better Get Hit in Your Soul.
Yeah.
So, you know, these are not just titles. They go deep. They make you to do your own research about you, you know.
Mm.
So there were a lot of teachings. You know, when we buy vinyls, the good thing about the vinyls are the back sleeves. You get educated.
Liner notes.
Yes, liner notes. You get educated.
Mm.
So Charles Mingus was just... one of those people. The only thing that I used to laugh about him is, like, he was huge.
Yeah.
And then he drove a Porsche.
I didn't know that part of the story, but hey, I'm getting educated here as well. You know, and with the Montreux Festival coming to Africa, South Africa, you know, it places our country inside a global jazz lineage this moment, you know. What does it mean, maybe, for artists, African artists, to host Montreux? That's a huge milestone.
It's a huge milestone. It's just like we're hosting G20. We're hosting 2010 World Cup. So I think if I was a jazz musician, I would always pray that they fit me in.
All the lineups.
I think Montreux has just made every South African proud.
Yeah, absolutely. And we were saying, you know, off air that it seems to be an international festival more than a local festival.
Yeah.
We hope that, I guess, you know,
they'll balance it out.
Because it would be a shame if we cannot experience it the way the world has been experiencing it for over 60 years.
Yes.
You know, and after four decades, you know, you've said that I'm still learning. What is art still teaching you, Prasam?
You know, art, to me, it's like, you'll never say, now I stop eating food.
Mm.
You keep on eating. It keeps you going.
Mm.
So art is like that to me. I discovered various things all the time, and I absorb them. And when I go down memory lane of all the things that I've done, and that's why I always say, I my sketchbooks are important to me because some of the collectors, when they buy, they would ask you, can I buy a sketchbook? No. Hmm. That sketchbook teaches me the journey of where I've started, because each and every sketchbook is different.
Mm.
So it teaches me my journey in this art world. So you learn every day.
As you go.
As you go.
Every day.
Yeah.
We're sitting in a room of Kofifi FM that has a lot of musical equipment, and I know you've said you have about 7, I suppose, record players, and you have, and a deep love for vinyl. Rasem, what is it about this ritual of listening that matters so much to you?
It's very good for my soul. It makes me enjoy life. It makes me enjoy life. Like, when I'm seated there, in this house, I can sit anywhere to listen. That's the privilege of having this space. Sometimes when I wake up, taking a shower, a bath, I have a system there, I'll listen.
Yeah.
Do you know, I've started a day with listening to good music.
Yes, it's a ritual. Yeah.
So I can sit anywhere. So I might say, through my passion and my hard work, I would regard myself as privileged to be in this space.
As you prepare for shows, you know, when you travel globally, how do you carry South Africa with you into those spaces?
Well, I always carry my country Because sometimes there will be like sessions of talks and relate my story as a South African. And somewhere when I'm in a certain space, I would be asked questions like, we know that you do collage, but how does it feel to be the artist who did the collage of Steve Biko? And I would explain that the system had to deal with a person like Steve Biko to teach us a lesson that no one is bigger than the system. What was Kruger's words when Kruger was the Minister of Police, when Steve Biko was announced dead? He said something which I, like returning a curveball, I used his words as the title of the Steve Biko. Or he said it left him cold when he was told that Steve Biko has died.
Had passed him.
And then I gave that artwork the title of It Left Him Cold.
Very fascinating title. Very fascinating title. And we can carry on, you know, about reflecting on the histories and so on and so forth. I want our conversation to move into the future. And starting off with the last 3 years of South African jazz music, what is your take on all of that? A lot has happened. Some favorites, some highlights?
With our local musicians?
That's right.
Plenty, plenty. You know, that upright that you see there?
Yeah.
Heavy Tradie came and he played it.
Hmm.
I've been having Fair Faku. I've been very close friend to Rajoni Mekwa.
Yes.
Zim Mawana. I love our jazz musicians, and like now lately they make me more proud because now there are young lions that are hot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Many boys and girls are hot.
Yeah.
So I think I was impressed when Wynton Marsalis took South African band to New York and to be part of Wynton Marsalis and his band. I mean, like, he took who's our famous piano player?
Nduduzo.
Nduduzo. Mm. He took Nduduzo, Mekoi Mkubat, many of them. So it feels like the world is listening to us.
Finally.
But yeah, one of my greatest admirer who came to my house, he was a quiet listening person. He said, you're DJing very well, Begim Seleko. I mean, he died too young.
Yeah.
He died too young. Because I bet if Begi was here, definitely he was going to be part of Franchuk.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you spoke of the young lions, which are impressive in every single way. And they're taking us into, you know, the new frontier of South African jazz. What are your hopes for 2026 for South African jazz?
I think it's the Franchuk thing. It's going to inspire our musicians more. It's going to put us on another platform. Which is, like, now I feel that we are on another platform, but it's gonna elevate us. It's gonna elevate us.
Surpassing global status, but now stratosphere in the sky.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Now the sky is the limit.
We're gonna pass that too, and then we'll have no limits. You know, wonderful conversation this Sunday, of course, with Brasem, and we are spending time, you know, with him in his own personal space, and we're just engaging on his life and times as a South African. I think that's the perfect way to speak into this conversation, the art of listening. You know, Brasem, when younger artists look at your journey, what do you hope they hear beneath the success?
I talk to a number of them, and I said the only way to survive in any practice is to focus, discipline, and be humble. You will win those. But if you're off track with those, like I'm talking about my experience, and I can see some of the younger ones when his name is like now appearing, they think they're bigger than anyone else. And that's a killer.
Yeah.
That's a killer.
Yeah. In closing, if your life was a jazz composition, what would the opening track be called and what key would it be played in? Two-pronged question.
That doesn't matter. I think it will be titled Peace.
Peace.
Yeah.
In what key?
That I don't know.
Oh, but it's been a beautiful conversation. Of course, finally sitting here in your space, surrounded by memory and movement. You know, what does listening mean to you today? There is appreciation, I think. If I'm going to capture it correctly, there's appreciators who just sit and listen and engage. And then there are those of us who sit quietly and paint to this thing. Others read books to this thing, you know. Apart from you working with it, do you find it as an element of relaxation? What does that mean for you, Jazz?
There is element of relaxation in it. There's a lot of it. Because right now, I'm off my canvases. Mm. And then this is the moment now to relax. Because like, I might be having these so many jazz vinyls.
Mm.
But some of them, I forgot about them.
Yeah.
So I revisit them. And then like now I relax. Read, you know, have a glass of wine.
That's it.
And then at the end of the day, they might say, it's LG, life is good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If we can do all these things and still work, life is absolutely good.
Yeah.
You know, but thank you so much for spending time with us, Prasem, and allowing us into your space, you know, where you fuse your favorite things, including jazz music, which you have so wonderfully curated for our sit down today. You know, it's been a long time coming. You know, we've watched you from a distance, you know, but finally we are in the space and we appreciate being here with you. So thank you so much for being on the show.
You're welcome. I thank to be part of your show.
You're also welcome.
Yeah.
You're also welcome. Of course, Sam Slingerter reminds us that jazz is not only heard, it is seen, it is felt, layered and remembered. From Painville to Montreux, from vinyl to canvas. This has been The Art of Listening with Sam Slingerter on The K-Jazz Show.